Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
So the G20 meets tomorrow to figure out the European debt crisis.
He said the European crisis, but really, well, he meant ours, all of ours.
Today on the broadcast, the ripple effects here and all over. From American Public Media and just for today,
the BBC World Service.
This is Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business, providing automatic online backup solutions for small businesses and the computer files they depend on. Learn more and receive a free trial at Carbonite.com with code Marketplace.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And from Bush House in London, I'm Justin Rowlatt of the BBC's Business Daily.
It's Wednesday, the 2nd of November, and as leaders of the world's 20 biggest economies meet in the south of France tomorrow to tackle yet again what is turning out to be a global problem,
we thought, what better time for a global radio program, a transatlantic collaboration to explore how the European debt crisis is affecting the entire world. Just ask the world's biggest bond trader.
The time to get out is roughly equivalent to the time to get in, sort of biblical in a way, 7 years of lean following 7 years of fat.
Our joint interview with PIMCO co-founder Bill Gross coming up in just a bit. But first, oh, to be a fly on the wall in Cannes, France this week, because really, southern France is never a bad place to be.
But also because no matter what you might have heard about a Greek bailout, Europe is still in trouble.
All right, Justin, let's pause here for a second and make sure we're all still speaking the same language. There is the Greek debt crisis that we are all way too familiar with. But what can we say now about the rest of Europe with the Greek bailout, you have to say, shaky?
Well, the Greek deal was the linchpin, remember, of the whole thing. If there's no Greek rescue, then, well, all bets are off. We could be talking about the nightmare Europe has been desperate to avoid. Yep, a Greek default. And that would affect everyone all the way down the line.
That down the line part? That's us, right?
Yep. If Greece defaults, then suddenly all the banks and governments around the world with Greek debt on their books, they have to write it off. Then, yep, we're talking contagion, the crisis spreads, other indebted countries like Spain, Italy. And I think you know the drill.
Yeah, I do. All too well, in fact, because down on the corner of 7th Street here in Los Angeles, and I am not making this up, Wall Street, right in downtown, sits the Southern California Flower Market.
All right, so those I know, those are hydrangeas. Those are birds of paradise. That's what they are. I have no idea what those are.
The market's part of the biggest flower district in the country, and the flowers are stacked all over the place, piles and piles of them. The smell, as you might imagine, is incredible. But what you really see, if you let your mind wander past the flowers, is the global economy.
Holland, Ecuador, Colombia, Chile, New Zealand, Australia.
Every day, Pat Dawson imports flowers from 15 different countries for the company he runs, Mayesh Wholesale. His buyers are local, grocery stores and wedding planners and event venues. The flower business, though, is global. So what happens 7,000 miles away, in Greece, let's just say, shows up here on the floor of the flower market. A weaker euro means cheaper tulips from Holland. But all the uncertainty of strikes and debt bailouts just kills confidence.
I think it's been tough in Europe with the uncertainty with the Greek crisis. There's so much tough or bad economic news out there, it's hard to feel like the momentum is something we can just grab and go with.
Arjen Bosma runs Holland Flower Market. It's right around the corner from Pat Dawson.
When people place orders a month in advance, I have to basically say, okay, it might be this price, but it could be this price if the euro goes back up, which is sometimes tough to do because you might price yourself out of the market. But I need to play it safe and need to make money also.
It's $5.95.20.
Here's the thing, though. Sellers want to make money. Consumers don't really want to spend.
Are those chrysanthemums?
Oh, yes.
No, they're carnations.
Oh, man. I was so close.
Mary Falkingham is a floral designer, but business for her just isn't what it used to be. Brides are doing their own flowers to cut costs.
There's a lot of Martha Stewarts out there.
Virginia Muskalevskis, for one.
We're buying flowers for my daughter's wedding, which is on Friday.
Okay, no pressure, but you don't have a lot of time.
I know.
Not a lot of time, not a lot of money either.
Why are you doing this yourself? I mean, there are people who do this like for a living.
Because it's a way we can save money.
Yeah.
And therein lies the global economy object lesson for the day. Virginia Musklevskis brought $800 with her to buy wedding roses that day. She wound up spending just $575.
Great for her, not so good for everyone else.
So today at that other market on the other Wall Street, traders took heart in what Ben Bernanke had to say.
We'll have the details when we do the numbers.
God, it's weird to hear somebody else say that. You want to know why Europe being preoccupied by crisis matters? Try this one on. Europe is our biggest single trading partner. It is, as it happens, China's biggest trading partner, too.
In fact, business between Europe and China accounts for 10% of all the trade done on the entire planet. So for Chinese exporters to the EU, the crisis has brought, well, if not disaster, then certainly slower sales. But China's domestic growth means new opportunities for European companies in search of profits. Marketplace's China correspondent Rob Schmitz reports.
These days, it may seem hard to find success stories among European companies, but not if you're in China. At a factory in the Yangtze Delta city of Changzhou, workers make hydraulic cylinders that'll be used in excavators and cranes. 5 years ago, workers at this plant, run by the Chinese company Sunde, had no idea how to make these precision parts. That was before 2009, when the Finnish company Norhydro moved here and showed them how. It was all part of a partnership deal, says Norhydro CEO Yuri Otrog.
We are coming to here. We have learned Chinese culture, how to do the work in China. How are we going to China market? Of course, we have to give something to them. So it's a win-win situation.
Trog says Norhydro's sales dipped by a third when the Eurozone crisis struck. But sales have bounced back thanks to his decision to move manufacturing to China, a place that's quickly becoming the biggest market for Norhydro's products. In return, Norhydro has given its Chinese partners something they crave, technology. Down the river in Shanghai, Zhong Shenwei heads a Chinese investment fund.
I think China is now facing an historic opportunity. We need core technology, but we can't develop it on our own. So we need to look to outside resources to help us transform our economy as soon as possible.
Zhong has made his first trips to Europe this year in the hopes of buying a tech company. European companies are happy to hand over some of their secrets, but not everything. Norhydro's Trog says he's carefully guarding the company's core technology from being copied and sold in the Chinese market.
Of course, everybody's saying that if you are coming to China, everybody's copying. But everybody's also copying in the Western world. But you have to run faster than the others.
But other companies have a hard time keeping up. Hundreds of miles away in northern Jiangsu province, an empty warehouse with a single worker shows the other side to the EU crisis in China. This factory belongs to the Chinese company Ozo. The company makes kitchen appliances like gas range burners and hoods. Before the EU crisis, Ozo ran two factories, hired 200 workers, and exported half its products to Italy. Now, the company's revenue has fallen by two-thirds. It's closed one factory, and just 40 workers remain. Ozo's general manager, Wang Daying, shakes his head.
We've given up on Europe now to focus 100% on China's domestic market. It won't be easy. We have to start promoting, marketing, brand building, all of that. This is new for us.
In the absence of a plan, Wang looks to me. It's not every day a European-looking journalist visits your factory. As I leave Wang's lonely warehouse, the other employee snaps some photos of us. They'll be included in the company's new promotional material for the China market, what might look to some as a European endorsement for a company struggling to survive a European crisis. Reporting from Jiangsu Province, China, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
There are two words that seem to move the markets more than anything else, consumer and confidence. As it happens, the BBC has just done a global survey on that topic. Justin, what'd you learn?
Well, certainly no surprises for rich countries. The poll found that people living in wealthy economies, well, they're rather a pessimistic bunch, with most people expecting bad or mostly bad times to come.
Stands to reason, I'd say, given their relationships with Europe, right?
Yeah, except emerging economies, many of which also have strong ties with Europe, are decidedly upbeat. Brazilians, Indians, Chinese, they're pretty chipper. Cheeriest of all, though, are people in nations like Nigeria and Kenya. We have a regular commentator from Kenya, Wycliffe Muga. He says his country is somewhat affected by the Eurozone crisis, but the biggest casualty in his region is likely to be Africa's own monetary union.
Everywhere you go in Kenya, you will find signs of a government seriously trying to bring economic opportunity to its people. We have many new and vastly improved roads, water pipes and power lines stretching into regions where they had never been seen before, and other major infrastructure improvements. So even though Kenyans remain acutely aware that around half our population live in extreme poverty, looking at these improvements, it is hard not to believe that we have good times ahead. So is there any chance that the Eurozone crisis, itself created by excessive borrowing on the part of some nations, will have a negative impact on our economy and the current optimistic mood? After all, many of our key trading partners, the buyers of our tea, coffee, fresh-cut flowers, as well as the source markets of our tourists, are Europeans. Well, in the short term, the effects are unlikely to be devastating, though they will definitely be negative. It is true that people generally respond to economic uncertainty by reducing personal spending. And with both vacations and flowers being at the end of the day, luxuries which can be swiftly abandoned, we are likely to have fewer tourists visiting and fewer flowers sold. More significant, though, whether for good or bad, is the potential long-term loss of faith in the virtues of monetary unions. Developing nations often imitate others when planning for the future, and their planners love little more than creating local versions of what they see working well in richer nations. So the five East African nations of Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi have long been working on plans for monetary union as part of their attempt to create a single East African trading zone. Still, East African plans for monetary union would be brought to a grinding halt if, as seems likely, the creation of the euro turns out to be a noble experiment which never quite worked as advertised.
Wycliffe Muga is the BBC World Services correspondent for Letter from Africa. He lives in Mombasa, Kenya.
Coming up.
My family's been here 3-4 generations, like a lot of other stallholders down here. But the supermarkets, you know, they've killed the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, they've done them all.
A trip to London's Portobello Road, but first, let's do the numbers. All right, wait, hold it. Wait. So, Justin, you know we have the segment we call the numbers, right?
Yeah, I've heard of that. To be honest, I don't think that much of it.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, I think in a global economy, there could be better things for you to spend your time on than 30 measly stocks in the Dow.
All right, so put up or shut up. Like what?
Well, you know, how about the price of oil, for example?
Yeah, we do the price of oil all the time on this show. Give me something better.
All right, okay. A bit left field. Yeah. How about the price of high-end wine?
Which is an indicator of what?
Well, as it happens, it turns out that the price of expensive red wine moves up and down in almost direct correlation with the price of oil. Hmm. And this is where it becomes interesting, because it's not driven by wealthy countries where demand's pretty stable, but by demand in emerging markets. So, you know, if the price of rouge is rising, then emerging countries are doing pretty well. And hopefully the global economy is too.
Yeah, which is where reality sets in. The LiveX Wine Investables Index, based in London, as it happens, is down 4% so far this year. And you're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Carbonite Business. Carbonite Business is an online automatic backup solution designed specifically for small businesses. Carbonite Business automatically and continually backs up computer files to a secure offsite location. In the event of a hard drive crash, virus, or other computer problem, files can easily be recovered. To learn more about Carbonite Business and to receive a free trial, visit Carbonite.com and use the code Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Labor Department releases its preliminary productivity and costs report for the third quarter. The American Institute for Cancer Research begins its annual conference on food, nutrition, physical activity, and cancer. And he's remembered for his tough guy films, including the Death Wish franchise. Actor Charles Bronson was born on November 3rd, 1921. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm Justin Rowlatt with the BBC's Business Daily. And this is a special co-production on the global impact of the European debt crisis.
There's a saying in investing that I'm pretty sure you've heard. Past performance, it goes, is no guarantee of future results.
So with that in mind, is there a lesson in history that might shed some light on what's happening in Europe today?
A lot of people point to Argentina, which defaulted on its sovereign debt in 2002, devalued its currency, but, as the BBC's Paul Henley reports, is recovering quite nicely.
Actually, most economists agree that Argentina's recovery since the crash has been nothing short of miraculous. New money is being flaunted in the gleaming waterside cafes that didn't even exist 8 years ago. And there's been a big boom in domestic production. But when it comes down to it, Argentina owes its recovery overwhelmingly to one thing: the humble soya bean. Being sown in countless thousands of spring fields here, it's being exported on unprecedented levels, largely to China. And the opportunity for profit here in the vast, fertile flatlands of the Pampas, where there are two harvests a year, is big. So big that cow-herding gauchos could soon be a thing of the past. Jorge Piran's family has been farming this land for more than 100 years.
Prices increase a lot. Farmers change from cattle. I think it's good for the country. It's a pity that part of our culture is missing.
Argentina has had other advantages Greece could arguably do with. Devaluation was, of course, possible without the euro, making exports viable again overnight. And the country's South American location, according to Martin Redrado, former governor of the central bank and now senior politician, has been crucial.
The dollars that Argentina needed to finance its growth, also to increase the level of local consumption, has been provided by basically the goods that we sell abroad. And also I have to say that the neighborhood where Argentina is living is much stronger than what we had before. Brazil is much stronger. So, for example, you say, well, is it just commodities? No, we are selling cars to Brazil.
In this clothes factory in the aftermath of the economic crash, the workers, faced with redundancy, burst through police lines, seized control, and declared the business their own cooperative. Celia Martinez, machinist and briefly national symbol of workers' defiance, led the resistance.
Strange just to say that, without the crisis, none of this would have happened. The evictions were terrible, but out of that came something very special.
Do you have a message for those crowds that you see on the television in Greece?
Que tenga confianza en sus propias fuerzas.
It would be to tell the workers in Greece to trust in their own strength.
Greeks, unfortunately, might need to do more than man the barricades to see the kind of recovery Argentinians have seen.
The BBC's Paul Henley from Buenos Aires.
Here's a fundamental truth about the debt crisis Europe is going through.
You can prop up bad debts all you want, but until somebody takes the loss, they're still bad debts.
That's why the deal last week was so important. Banks were expected to agree to take the loss on those Greek bonds.
The world's biggest bond trader, though, says you need something else besides that. You need growth. Bill Gross is the managing director at PIMCO down the road from us in Newport Beach. And I asked him when we talked, just for a refresher, how we came to find ourselves in this fix.
Well, it happened because the world went crazy in terms of overconsumption and too much debt. And we see that obviously in Greece, and we see it in some of the southern Euroland countries, but in the United States, we all went crazy. In most of the developed world, which is where most of the debt is, what we describe as the new normal, which is a very low growth type of economy, is what we're going to experience for the next several years at least. And so growth is critical.
Yeah. So riddle me this, Bill. Where's the growth?
Well, it's hard to find.
I feel much better now.
In Euroland, it's almost non-existent, and policies in Euroland are really towards fiscal conservatism, but lowering deficit should be something that takes place down the road as opposed to immediately, because it hinders growth.
Can you see a way out of the Eurozone crisis without growth, Bill?
I can't. And to suggest that becoming fiscally constrictive and balancing the budget, you know, will produce growth, I think is a stretch of the imagination.
It looks as if the Western economies are suffering. Meanwhile, around the world, there is growth. And crucially, there's optimism that there'll be future growth. So do we see a decoupled world? Is there a divided world?
I think we do. Basically, economies such as China, such as Brazil, such as India, have rather underdeveloped consumer sectors and low levels of debt, just the opposite of developed countries. And so it's possible for them to expand their consumer sector because their consumer sectors are very underdeveloped.
Can growth in those economies lift the Western economies out of the doldrums that they find themselves in at the moment?
And if not, then what do we do, right?
Well, they can. It's sort of like the U.S. used to be the big locomotive, and now perhaps we're into the territory of the little engine that could, I guess. But at the moment, Chinese growth and Brazilian growth and growth in India is not rubbing off in the same way as U.S. growth used to in terms of global growth.
Okay, Bill, one last question for you from London. How long is it going to take us to get out of this crisis?
You know, Rogoff and Reinhardt, who are economists in the United States, they suggest that the time to get out is roughly equivalent to the time to get in, sort of biblical in a way, 7 years of lean following 7 years of fat. And as long as debt becomes a focal point in terms of fiscal and monetary policies, then we're likely to experience very slow growth in the developed world for a long, long time.
Oof. Wow. Bill, quickly, before we let you go, are you counting on anything or looking for anything to come out of the G20 this week?
Certainly an affirmation of the EU grand plan and perhaps a hint or two in terms of additional support. Perhaps China puts in its piece and perhaps the IMF speaks up. But those would be the topics of the weekend, I suppose, in terms of who will participate in the financing of Euroland. And so we might see some hints in that direction.
Not to put too fine a point on it, but we're down to affirmations and hints. Is that where we are?
Yeah, I think that's been the case. And remember that the grand plan is an affirmation. It's all been hints and promises to do better. So we'll simply have to see in terms of the implementation of these policies how it goes forward. And it hasn't gone smoothly in the past.
Bill Gross at the bond firm PIMCO. We started today with flowers.
We're going to end it with fruit.
Equally perishable, equally global.
Think for a minute about where those grapes you might have had today probably came from.
And as you found out the other day, Justin, equally vulnerable to the European crisis.
So I've come down to what used to be one of London's busiest markets, to Portobello Road, to find out how people here feel about their future. Now, this place, on the weekends, is absolutely heaving. But during the week, it is a pale shadow of its weekend self.
How are you, sir? All right?
Market trading is in fruit seller Peter Kane's blood. But at the moment, he's struggling.
My family's been here 3-4 generations, like a lot of other stallholders down here. But the supermarkets, you know, they've killed the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, they've done them all.
But you've got more problems now, haven't you? Because you import a lot of this stuff from Europe. Presumably the prices of fruit from Europe have gone up because of the exchange rate.
Absolutely.
So you've got some oranges there from Spain. How has the price changed on those?
Well, they've doubled in price.
Doubled?
They've doubled. All fruit has doubled in price. All fruit. From South Africa, from Europe, it's all doubled in price.
So how is it affecting you personally?
Personally? Well, I'm looking for a moneylender. That's how it's affecting me personally. It's not good, mate. It's awful. It's just awful. I mean, I needn't say anything. Just look.
Yeah, I'm looking either way down the street.
Can you see how many market traders are out today?
Normally the market would be full. We've got, what, three market traders out? And then we've got how many customers are there on the street?
Well, four.
Would you be able to
see this thing out?
I really don't think so, no.
Are you serious, or are you just...
No, I'm serious. I am serious. I mean, I'm the last person to, like, my father had this before that, my grandfather before that, and all that ago, but I've got a daughter who works in advertising. I'm sure she don't want to be standing there in the market, you know. We can't do anything. Just, you know, we'll say, keep punching, we'll see what we can do.
Cheers, Peter. Thank you very much. Have you got a moment?
I do.
Has the economy,
yes,
the changes in the economy, have they affected you?
Yeah, of course. For starters, it's hard to get work. So I'm out of work.
You're unemployed?
I'm unemployed.
Is that, and do you think that's a result of the kind of recession that Britain's been going through?
Yeah, definitely, because I work as a gardener. I go from contract to contract. And I've noticed that there's less work. So I'm spending sort of more time at home.
And what about shopping? What about going out and buying things here in the market?
I've noticed in the supermarkets, there's been a few instances when I've got home and I've been certain that I've forgotten a bag at a supermarket. And all it is just that things are just much more expensive. You're just getting a lot less for the same amount of money.
Justin's kind of amazing, forgetting that shopping bag thing. It's kind of like a shopping bag indicator, if you will, right?
Yeah, a blinding insight there, Kai. Thanks.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
All right, that's it. That's Marketplace for this Wednesday from American Public Media.
And from Business Daily, from the BBC World Service.
Just because we ought to do it somewhere. Today, the Dow Industrials gained 178 points, about 1.5%. The NASDAQ rose 33 points, 1.25%. The S&P 500 up 19 points, 1.6%. Thanks today to the Business Daily team over at the BBC.
I won't be here, but coming up next time, from Europe to Syria and another economic crisis.
Of course, if there is any strikes or serious opposition on the part of the business community, they could paralyze the economy.
I'm Justin Rowlatt.
And I'm Kai Rizdal. I do hope you can join me for that tomorrow. This is APM, that's American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.